I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. It is an eventful Wednesday, so we got a lot to talk about here on the midweek show, Sam. NFL news, a lot happening. We had the trade deadline. We have some unfortunate things happening off the field. A lot to talk about here. So
yeah, none of the interesting and eventful news surrounds the trade deadline, or at least moves that were made, because almost nothing happened.
We're going to talk Melvin Ingram for a sixth rounder at least, right?
Great. Outstanding. Yes. That's going to be 25 minutes of the podcast, I assume.
We're going to recap Monday Night Football, Giants and Chiefs. We got a lot to discuss here. So where do you want to start here?
The housekeeping. We've got to get through all the housekeeping stuff. Keep sending us emails. We've got some good emails come through. We will hit up a couple of them later in the show. NFLpodcast@pff.com is our email address. We've got some cool stuff come through recently. Fire stories, fire us questions, anything you want that we will potentially use, particularly on the Wednesday show. So that's a good spot. Also, if you are, again, in any way, shape, or form connected with a baseball facility in the greater Cincinnati area, we are still looking for a venue to be part of this whole charity drive thing that the Stinger Baseball Bat here is part of.
Yeah, we got to get this going in the next like 2 weeks. It's going to happen in the next two weeks.
It was cold this morning. Yes. Really cold.
It's getting really cold for this.
I had to drag the chilies in from outside lest they die. I mean, it's getting cold.
Yeah, serious time. World Series just ended last night. Usually an indicator that it's not baseball season anymore.
And it's time to stop playing baseball.
But I will say, back in Dubs, AA, in the Eastern League, first like 2 weeks of the season, 35 degrees every night.
Well, here's the thing.
Like, 35.
In what way does bad weather hinder the baseball?
Sam,
uh-huh.
You're going to be trying to hit off me with a metal bat.
Yeah, it'll hurt.
It's going to hurt.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's going to hurt anyway. Like,
ball doesn't carry as well in the cold weather either.
Look, if that's our limiting factor.
You might hit a bomb that gets knocked down by the wind.
If that's our limiting factor, I'm prepared to run the risk. Like, I am prepared to sacrifice some distance from the shot.
It also, it takes more time for the old man to warm up.
Yeah.
It's just a lot.
I'm also prepared to sacrifice your warm up.
You're right. Okay, I'm not worried. I'm not worried about it. I pitched in 34 degree weather, all that stuff. Pitched in the snow before.
Right.
Not worried about that.
We are cold weather people.
Someone suggested the local Florence Yalls could be a good stadium for us to look at. And you didn't realize that was my first professional team.
I didn't.
You didn't realize that the first professional pitch that I ever threw was right down the street here in Florence, Kentucky, when we were the Florence Freedom back in 2004.
I realized none of this.
Yeah. You had no idea. So we'll try to, if there's any Yalls folks here that could hook us up with, you know, just need the mound and the plate
and
a little
radar,
bit of the infield.
The radar gun.
Radar gun. So maybe the Yalls will help us out.
Maybe the catcher and his equipment.
Well, you see, like the Florence, the players don't like live at the stadium during the offseason. There's nobody there.
I would guess. Oh, they've completely gone home at this point. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. There's like probably nobody even at
the catcher owns his own stuff, or that's like sitting in a locker somewhere.
No, you probably have your own. Get your own gear. I'll find a catcher.
To find some gear.
I will find a catcher. We need a stadium.
Okay.
So I could pitch to you.
A stadium. Wow.
A stadium or a field. Whatever we land on. I'm throwing today. I'm going to go get her going.
If you come in on Monday, like in a sling, that would be pretty funny. Not even Monday, tomorrow.
Funny.
You come in tomorrow.
If I made it through like 8 years sling. Professionally of not yeah, in yeah, yeah. college and high school of not having a surgery.
Like
and then
the Baker Mayfield shoulder strap just sitting there.
Certainly possible.
I'd laugh.
Anyway, that's all being, still working on it. That's all being set up. Anything else housekeeping-wise?
That's it, right? That's our housekeeping. Email us, charity update. We're up to, what, 4465 as of right now. And email us, donate money, and figure out where the hell we're going to do this thing.
All right, so we're going to do that. We're going to get it. What do we want to get into here? A little Monday Night Football review?
Yeah, yeah.
To start? Okay. We said on Wednesdays we'll review Monday Night Football a little bit. We'll preview Thursday Night Football as well. Jets and Colts, of course, we'll go in depth on that.
Great.
Giants, Chiefs. Has there ever been a more demoralizing win in NFL history than the Chiefs' 20-17 win over the Giants? This was supposed to be the Chiefs' get-right game for their offense, and boy, does it look bad offensively for the Chiefs.
It's just so funny. We're like, last week, the narrative out there was the Chiefs' offense is fine. Don't worry about it. It's just turning the ball over a lot, and turnovers are fluky. Eventually, that'll stop happening, and then everything's good. And, you know, certain people have been pointing to numbers that suggest the offense isn't really that fine. It's productive outside of the turnovers, but it's not what it used to be. And that's potentially a problem that also feeds into the turnovers. But anyway, then we have this game against the Giants where their offense comes out cooking, taking the easy stuff, like maximizing all the 1,000 paper cuts, marches straight down the field, and then immediately starts to commit turnovers again. Then we come out of this game, and now everybody in the space of a week has now decided that everything is broken with the Chiefs offense, and what do we need to fix? We're like one game away from you all claiming that this was not a thing, and now it's a thing.
People were trying to defend the turnover aspect, and I thought you had a very astute point, and we discussed it last week, that it's not just the turnover-worthy play number, and I appreciate everybody around the football landscape here using our turnover-worthy plays, right? They're using our point that, look, Mahomes doesn't have that many more turnover-worthy plays this year than last year. He's now up to 12. Last year at this time, he had about 10 and only one interception to show for it. This year, he's actually got that hidden one. He's got 13. But he's got 13 turnover-worthy plays this year and 10 actual interceptions, but a bunch of those are fumbles.
Right, but the point was the rate that people were saying. Like, up until Monday, he had a lower turnover-worthy play rate than last year.
But these plays are worse.
Right.
These are the more likely to become turnover plays
Even after Monday, it's only marginally ahead. But the point was, not all turnover-worthy plays are created equal. There is a scale of how bad the turnover-worthy play was. And Mahomes has significantly more really bad turnover-worthy plays than he had in previous years. So it's not that he's putting the ball in harm's way more. It's that he's really putting the ball in harm's way more often.
Yeah, and to be honest, the other night, one actual turnover, right? Just the one interception, which was
one interception.
A funky one, right? Off a helmet and bounces up. But then three total turnover-worthy plays, including two that defenders got their hands on, one bad misread of an underneath linebacker that he tried to throw it through, and then Mahomes also fumbled in the pocket, had a good question on Twitter about, oh, but sometimes you guys absolve the fumbles. We absolve the fumble if it's like in the throwing motion and it's literally blindsided, like you just can't avoid it if you're the quarterback. It's more of a bad block situation. This was Mahomes holding the ball 4 or 5 seconds in the pocket and then fumbling. But the turnover luck reverted back, right? I mean, that was when they were in field goal range for the game-winning field goal, and he fumbled. Like, they were trying to throw the game away again, or at least Mahomes was. So it's a slump, man. I'm watching this game saying the Chiefs' offense is in a slump. As a team, they've scored 23 points over the last two games. Like, something is just wrong here with the Chiefs' offense, and they do have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce still on the field. Right. So if you had told me, hey, look, the Chiefs offense is going to slump, I would say, OK, who'd they lose? Is it Tyreek
right,
or is it Kelce? Which one did they lose?
So now people are talking about this whole, well, it's too high safety. Patrick Mahomes apparently can't be cover two.
Do you need some numbers behind that, too, as well?
Oh, you got some?
I've got some numbers.
OK.
The Chiefs have faced, if you call cover two, cover four, cover six, too high shells. That's when you generally have too high safeties. It's not all cover two, but it's two high safeties. It's a safer coverage. 50% of the Chiefs' dropbacks are facing two high shells. The next closest team is the Jaguars at 37%. So that is a massive difference. So the Chiefs truly are facing different defensive schemes than any other team around the league. So you can carry on with your point. Just wanted to add that context.
Well, so there's a few things at work here. One, the NFL generally is trending towards more two high looks. Right, this Brandon Staley, Vic Fangio defense that is now in vogue is pulling the league away from those old Seattle Legion of Boom style defenses. So the league is pivoting towards more two high shells. And the reason they're doing that is because, generally speaking, those are better at stopping the pass and stopping explosive pass plays. Right. So Staley's defense, the perfect example. Look at what they were able to do, in particular to Russell Wilson. Like, the Seahawks live with those deep pass plays. couple of times last year, the Seahawks offense rolls out there and just like just shit the bed against this defense. They had no idea how to get the how to manufacture those deep shots again. The Rams took them away. That's what everybody is doing right now, and in particular, they're doing it to the Chiefs. And it's not like everybody's just running Tampa 2, right? Remember, this was a thing in the past, right? The Tampa 2 defense. This is how you take away the deep ball. Eventually, offenses figured out where the holes were and where the soft spots were in Tampa 2 defenses and could still just attack it. Those cover 2 hole shots down the sideline, the, you know, get a linebacker to carry the slot vertically, big hole in the middle. You could attack that. So teams went away from that. Now what you're seeing is this much more sophisticated kind of 2-high defense that is taking away those deep passes. And most offenses are not patient enough to take the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-yard pass play every single snap and go on 15-play drives and score that way. The Chiefs have been in the past.
Right, like we've seen them do that before. I've been on this show saying, I'm impressed by the Chiefs. They were patient in this game.
But they're not at the moment.
Right.
Like they started off that Giants game doing that, and it was like, oh, look, they've learned. They're patient. They're doing what's being given to them. And then as soon as they had that first turnover, it was like, oh, that's gone out the window. Now we're back to pushing. We're trying to get the thing done. We're worried. But the other thing is, it isn't that when you looked at what the Giants were doing with their 2-high looks, it was it was clever stuff. They weren't just like lining up in Tampa 2 and saying, oh, now you don't have the deep ball. What can you do? They were doing like they would come out of those 2-high high shells and bracket cover Tyreek and Kelsey.
Right.
And more than ever in the past, the Chiefs are so reliant on those two guys and have nothing beyond them. Again, it's not like this is the first time teams have come out there and said, well, let's double team those two, and then what do you got left?
That was Belichick's plan for years. And as I mentioned before, I'll tell you about the difference in a minute.
And in the past, when you did that, that's when Sammy Watkins would get like 12 for a $1.50 and 2 touchdowns.
Because, or the screen game, or just something else.
Because you had a third option that they were comfortable going to who could win one-on-one. Now, who's your third option, right? Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, like none of those guys are capable of winning one-on-one 15 times in a game and carrying the pass game. So all of a sudden, when they drop down on those shells and they double-team the two places Mahomes wants to go with the ball, and he's pressing, and they're getting freaky turnover luck, everything's bad.
Let me add some perspective here, too, because I wrote in one of my weekly articles last year about how the Chiefs actually still perform well offensively if Mahomes doesn't play well. It was uncanny. And again, I think one of the best things that we do here is separate the quarterback play from the production of the offense. So just using last year as an example, Mahomes had three games where he was 65, graded at 65 or below. We'll throw the Super Bowl in there because that was the beginning of this where it just didn't work. Super Bowl, the stats were bad and the grades weren't great either. But Mahomes had this history of grading at 65 or below, 60 or below, wherever you want to put the cutoff, in the offense still performing well. For instance, last year against Buffalo, we gave him a 61 overall grade. He still ends up with a 128 passer rating. Like the stats were still exceptional. Against New England, a 44 grade. But he still had a passer rating of 113. If you're just using these traditional stats, I know passer rating is not the best number. I'm just trying to use context here. That was because in the New England game and the Buffalo game, turnover luck, tap passes for touchdowns, like all that stuff added up. My point is, in the past, when Mahomes didn't play well, the offense still generally produced, right? Because it was like, okay, you've got a Kelsey, you have a Tyreek Hill, and you because they get so much attention, the screen game has always been outstanding under Andy Reid and the whole thing. Now that stuff is gone. And watching that offense, it was, I mean, death by 1,000 swing passes and little 5-yard hitches, right? It really was. And then when they came out of that, if they tried to do anything else, it just wasn't happening. They did have Tyreek open on a deep shot, and Mahomes missed it. And that's the other piece of this, right? So I don't think that the offense is just firing, right? It's not making up for games where Mahomes isn't great. But you also remember when we joked in the preseason that one game that Mahomes had? I think it was against Arizona. He missed like 5 out of 7 throws. It was bad. It was terrible. And we were like, oh, yeah, the Bucs broke Mahomes. I'm seeing elements of that inaccuracy here. It was an innocent little preseason game that mattered not for like the first 4 weeks of the season. But all of a sudden, Mahomes is like missing throws that he's usually hitting and all that stuff. There's just a lot of things adding up here.
Yeah.
Right. With the Chiefs offense to, and again, 23 points over 2 weeks. That used to be like the second quarter.
Yeah. For the Chiefs. And I think people are right in terms of, look, if they stop turning the ball over tomorrow, most of those problems go away. If the defense stops being the worst unit in the NFL, most of those problems go away. Like, those are the two biggest things impacting the Chiefs this season versus the Chiefs in previous seasons. But to act like the offense is exactly the same as it's always been, plus added turnovers, is not true. Like, the offense is not what it used to be. And I think there's a bunch of things impacting that, not least of which is that Mahomes and the offense know that they don't have the margin for error that they used to. They know that they're turning it over, and they know that their defense isn't stopping anybody. So all of a sudden, you're under pressure to be perfect. So when and that's so much harder when you know you have to do it in 10 plays. Like, when in the past, you knew that, okay, that's fine, we'll go out there and we're only ever like a 50-yard bomb away from putting 7 on the board. And I think there's like a freedom to that. You can play a lot more relaxed and a lot more efficient knowing that you just have the capacity to flip a switch and immediately put points on the board. Now they don't have that because teams are taking that away. And okay, you might scheme one up every now and again. It's still available, but it's not what you can rely on. So you know now that you have to go out there and execute a 10-play drive without screwing it up and without turning it over and win that way. And I think that's just hard. And now they're in this position where they're pressing, they're waiting for it to happen, and as soon as something goes wrong, the wheels fall off the wagon completely.
I think it's a big test. It's a big test for Mahomes right here. It's interesting that he has been elite for 3 years, and he hasn't run into a slump like this until now in year 4. And that, say, the league hasn't adjusted to him into year 4. Also, you know, is Travis Kelce losing a little bit of a step here? He looked pretty good early in the season, doesn't look as good right now. I don't know how much of that stuff is a factor.
Right, but we've also got to, like, we have to do this in the context of the last 3 years, right? So there's people now who are like, Patrick Mahomes, his mechanics are all over the place. He's making weird throws. He's doing, like, stuff that you never coach.
When you say people, you almost always mean Dan Orlovsky.
Not always. A lot of the time. Look, Dan happens to have some bad opinions. And when that happens, I refer to them. I'm trying to save the man by not calling him out every week.
I call him out every week because you refer to him as people. His name is Dan.
There are other people making the same bad point that, like, yes, Patrick Mahomes right now has some pretty atrocious mechanics. On the other hand, Patrick Mahomes just spent 3 years blowtorching the league with some pretty bad mechanics.
The same mechanics.
How can you complain about it now?
I'm of the belief that there's really no such thing as good or bad mechanics.
I know you are.
But so your arm either gets to where it needs to go or it doesn't. And if it does, it's good. If it doesn't, it's bad.
You cannot now decide that the way he plays the game is a problem. And kudos to, by the way, pre-game they were talking about this. And Alex Smith, of all people, was like, don't rein him in a bit. Let him play the game the way he plays the game, because that's how you get what you just had.
Yeah.
Don't tap the brakes on that. That's the worst thing you could do.
Peyton Manning, though, did make some really good points. They showed some plays from the Titans game where, and this reminds me of Rodgers, because Rodgers has been through these ebbs and flows through his career, right? When you look at Aaron Rodgers' career, you say, elite quarterback, he's awesome. We'll talk about Rodgers later as well because he's out this week. Rodgers is great. He's gone through times when he did not play great. And what was it? He was not taking what was there in structure. And I thought Peyton did a really good job saying, take the 5-yard curl, take the little hitch route, take the route that's within structure. Even the last play of the game that Mahomes had, he takes a sack, they kick a game-winning field goal. He had open receivers. He's had open receivers that he's just scrambling away from a clean pocket. If you're blaming the offensive line that they redid, maybe the tackles aren't as good as Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz. Pass blocking grade is 7th in the NFL right now. And the other night was the highest pass blocking grade the Chiefs have had all year, right? So it also goes to show, this is what our numbers tell us, right? A great offensive line does not put points on the board. It might keep you from having detrimental drives and, you know, third and longs, getting sacked and being under heavy pressure. Offensive line doesn't put points on the board, though. They got the best offensive line effort of the year, and they struggle to move the ball against a not-so-good Giants defense. And they have one of the best run blocking units. Like, Creed Humphrey is breaking records for rookie centers right now. And Trey Smith is unbelievable right now. They are awesome up front from an offensive line standpoint, or at least as good as they've been over the last 4 years.
Right. I'm not saying that Mahomes is playing well or that everything's fine. I'm just saying that you can't start to determine what's wrong with him and point to things that have been exactly the same for like 4 years and now decide they're a problem. Like, Mahomes doesn't play the game like a conventional quarterback. Never has, probably never will. You can't just flip, you can't just decide now because things are going badly, that's a problem. Like, either this was a thing or it's not. And it hasn't been a problem for three straight years. Like, he has been not just outperforming everybody else, but putting up what looked like unsustainable numbers and things that were completely unrealistic to ever expect. You can't then, once you start writing the other end of that variance, determine that it's a problem and we need him to start taking some pieces of Alex Smith's game and playing, you know, like Tom Brady. Like, it's just not, that's not the way you fix this.
It's all part of the NFL, man. You have to make adjustments. We talked about this with Sean McVay a couple of years ago, where we said, look, maybe the offense has hit a wall. Something needs to change here because defenses are catching up to it, or at least adjusting to it. So now it's your move, Chiefs. How are you going to, you still have Patrick Mahomes. You still have a very talented quarterback. You still have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Just to put a bow on this piece, though, to land the plane even, Sam. Remember that ridiculous term that showed up when we were early in our business meetings? Mm-hmm. Like, who the heck talks like that? To land this plane on the Chiefs.
You, apparently.
Apparently, they've suckered me right in. All the offseason talk about they invested all this money and time and draft capital in the offensive line. The real hole is not only Tyreek and Travis Kelce insurance, but wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4. If you're going to scorched earth the league, it is by having more playmakers. And they are lacking in that department. And it wasn't, and that was the bigger issue in the Tampa Bay Super Bowl than the offensive line was bad too. But that was as big of an issue. You do not protect the offensive line any better than having an open receiver in rhythm, and the Chiefs just don't have that beyond their top two. As you said, defense is taking those guys away. Mm-hmm. So it's a team-building challenge for the Chiefs.
Yeah, so there are some problems with the Chiefs' offense. They were also there last week. Just, you know, in case you're new to the case, you've only stumbled upon these problems after Monday night.
Yeah.
These have been here for a while.
And it was supposed to be an incredible battle. It was supposed to be Aaron Rodgers versus Patrick Mahomes. Finally, right? We didn't get it in 2019. Patrick Mahomes got hurt. It was Matt Moore instead. We didn't get it in 2020. The Bucs beat the Packers, so we didn't get that Super Bowl. And now Aaron Rodgers is going to be out Sunday with COVID. We'll get to that in a second. NFL fans, I know you're hungry for a big win this week. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. They got you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. And if they do, you win $200 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't yet available in your state, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. And DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. Pretty simple. All they have to do is win. And you win $200 in free bets. If they win, you win. With the promo code PFF this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required, one per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, so it's going to be Jordan Love against Patrick Mahomes.
Great. Weekend. Yay.
So we don't get the great battle.
No.
Obviously, an important loss for the Packers. Rodgers is out. Yeah, some people are just, it's breaking news for some people here live on YouTube. Rodgers is out, tested positive for COVID, and Kirk Benkert is also out. So the Packers are down to one quarterback. It's Jordan Love.
Yeah.
And we don't get to see Rodgers Mahomes.
No. And it turns out Rodgers may well have lied about being vaccinated all along, having said.
He lied to the media.
Yes.
Which is.
Also, potentially. Cares? So.
I don't care.
They're now talking that, well.
You can lie to, saying, you're allowed to lie to the media.
I mean, you're allowed to, but it doesn't stop you looking like a jackass when,
oh, sure.
When you're found out.
I mean, the media would never mislead us. Why would we do
but
that?
But it also turns out that the Packers and the NFL may have known about this because... So when they asked him way back in August, are you vaccinated? He replied, yeah, I'm immunized, which is a weird choice of words to use. When you're like prompted with the word to use, like, are you vaccinated? Yes, I'm vaccinated. Are you vaccinated? Yeah, I'm immunized is a strange word choice to grab. Now, either this was just an outright lie and he wasn't playing word games, or he was deliberately like misrepresenting the definition of the term immunized. Either way, he's then been like rocking around the place without a mask, which you have to do in the NFL protocols if you're unvaccinated, which is why you see Carson Wentz with a mask every time he does these interviews. Now it seems like the Packers and the NFL may have known that he wasn't vaccinated, so people have been facilitating him breaking the protocols, having, you know, fairly hardly clamped down on Lamar Jackson and made essentially bullied him into getting vaccinated. And Cam Newton may or may not be with the team, may or may not be relevant to his vaccination status. But all I'm saying is all of a sudden, a lot of people appear to have made things quite a lot easy for Aaron Rodgers to get around all of this stuff versus other people.
There was a report that he was following protocol at the stadium, but to your point, it's, I mean, he did interviews and whatever you could see, you could see for your own eyes what was happening.
Yeah. So somebody's going to be in trouble is all I'm saying.
It's people are up in arms because he misled people in an interview, when that's the bigger issue is probably there's going to be some sort of punishment come down if that's, yeah, if that's the case.
I also think, look, when you're asked the question directly, like every other human has just been saying, I'm not going to answer. It's a personal choice, right? Whatever bullshit that is a platitude.
I think it's a fair answer. Mind your own business.
Right. Which is absolutely fine for you to say, right? I disagree on the basis that in a global pandemic and a medical emergency, other people's business is also your business now. Like how other people react to this health crisis actually affects my life, right? It's like, you know, do I care that you drive within the speed limit and obey the rules of the road? Well, yes, because if you don't, it can impact me. So the point is, though, everyone else, when they haven't been vaccinated and they've been asked, are you vaccinated? They don't say no. Generally, they say, I'm not going to get into that now. It's a personal, personal choice. Okay. Again, I disagree, but that's fine. You at least answered the question without answering the question and didn't lie. Rodgers said, yes, I'm immunized, which is, it's just a lie. Like, it's just, okay, you can debate whether you're allowed to lie to the media, but it's generally not something people do, and you're probably not supposed to, but I don't know. Anyway, he's out. He got caught in his lie, and he's probably going to be in trouble for it. Now we get to see Jordan Love take on Mahomes.
I don't know what the punishment looks like for that.
I don't even know who gets punished, because Rodgers, the Packers, and the NFL appear to have facilitated this. And the NFL are the ones, presumably, who are going to be meeting out the punishment. So how the hell does that work?
I don't know. We'll find out. I wanted to see Rodgers Mahomes, though.
Yes.
Even a broken Mahomes.
We're never going to get to see it. It's like you always wanted the Rodgers-Brady Super Bowl. It's just never going to happen.
I just always predicted it. Yeah, that's what I predicted for 10 straight years.
This is going to be that as well. We're never going to see Mahomes-Rodgers.
Yeah, because they just played. Yeah. Unless Rodgers goes to the Broncos next year, then we'll maybe
find out. That'll be really fun to find out how he misses two games a year.
I know, right? Or Mahomes does.
2-3.
Well, it's an opportunity for the Chiefs now, because the Chiefs have the Packers, the Raiders, the Cowboys coming up. As again, the feeling of the Chiefs losing to the Titans and scoring 3 points was bad, but the feeling of the Chiefs beating the Giants by three
with
a game-winning field goal just felt way worse. Like, oh, they were supposed to get right there. So it doesn't get any easier for the Chiefs. This is one easier step. I am interested in seeing Jordan Love and his development and the whole thing. It takes a little luster off that game, and obviously we'll preview that entire game this tomorrow on tomorrow's weekend preview show. The other piece of it is, you know, the Packers have one loss. You know, the Bucs just lost. Packers just beat the Cardinals. The NFC top seed is wide open and really competitive, and just one game here or there is huge in this breakdown. So not having Aaron Rodgers is really an issue.
Yeah. It is going to be fascinating, though, seeing what we get out of Jordan Love. Like, we've incredibly small sample size in any form of play. The Chiefs have a terrible defense. Like, this is a game where Jordan Love could and potentially should look good. I mean, Kevin Clark tweeted that the Packers have, like, whatever it is, 6 days to draw up for Jordan Love who Daniel Sorensen is. Like, here's the game plan. Just circle Daniel Sorensen in every play.
It's fine. 49.
Right. Fine. 49. Throw the ball
49
there.
49 is not the mic. He's the target.
Right.
He's the bullseye.
That, like, pre-snap, you know, call is just, there's 49. That's where you're running. Like, it's a game where we should come out of this thinking that Jordan Love had a good game. Like, there's no reason why he wouldn't look good against, like, the worst defense in the NFL.
I mean, there's reasons, but.
Well, the reasons would be that he isn't very good. But my point is, this is a great starting spot.
Let's touch really quickly on the Chiefs trading for Melvin Ingram. So a lot of hype. There's a lot to talk about. Even though there weren't a lot of trades, DeSean Jackson getting released. We'll touch on the Henry Ruggs thing. There's a lot here. But Melvin Ingram was the one actual trade of somewhat significance, going from the Pittsburgh Steelers to the Chiefs for a sixth-round pick. Ingram clearly wanting out of Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh obliging, but he's been rushing the passer pretty well early in the season.
The Steelers just stopped using him, and I don't know why.
Dropping him into coverage a little bit.
Well, they do that. That's part of their scheme. Yeah, their defense does that in a way that a lot of others don't. But, like, yes, Melvin Ingram was rushing the passer extremely well earlier in the season, and then his playing time he started off 54 snaps, 57 snaps, 47, 35, 36, 17. We've just been slowly taking his playing time away. Why?
I don't know. If you're like me, though, if you see when Melvin Ingram gets traded, I would go to Premium Stats 2.0 and break down how well has he been playing. And we've got 25% off for, if you don't have it yet. PFF Pod, NFL Pod, NFL Pod, P-O-D, is your 25% off discount promo code for any PFF subscription. So that's what I would do, is go click on Melvin Ingram, click on his page, and you could see an 82.1 pass rush grade. I don't know what the answer is other than maybe, you know, Alex Highsmith is the future at that position.
Glad you bring that up, because that's what I was going to say. Some people will say, well, of course, they're scaling him back so they can get Alex Highsmith more involved, and he flashed last year. He looked good. Okay, so right now, Melvin Ingram has a PFF pass rushing grade of 82.1, and Alex Highsmith has one of 59.8. And you say, well, you know, you and your fancy PFF grades, they're just abstract numbers. They don't mean anything. Okay. Alex Highsmith has rushed the passer 159 times and has 10 total pressures. Melvin Ingram has rushed the passer 140 times, so 19 fewer, and has 18 total pressures, 8 more. He has been objectively a better pass rusher than Highsmith this season by quite some margin, and yet you are swinging those ratios in the wrong direction to the point where Melvin Ingram takes a look at that and goes, guys, what's going on here? I'm better than this guy. Why are you taking away my playing time? And they've gone, don't care. We're going to trade you away now. Bye-bye. Don't question our methods.
Especially a Steelers team that's 4-3. And, yep, you know, they're trying to make that one last push here. You know, they're not in rebuilding mode necessarily. So from a Pittsburgh standpoint, Alex Highsmith will be the guy. From a Kansas City standpoint, it's nice to have Ingram. Frank Clark played his best game as a Chief by our grades the other night. So those are the two edge rushers. Chris Jones back fully on the interior now, hopefully, probably, most likely. But, you know, look, Melvin, for all the talk, every year we talk about big-name pass rushers. We talk about pass rushers in the draft and spending high draft capital. Getting a guy like Melvin Ingram for pennies on the dollar who could still rush the passer is a really pretty valuable asset in the NFL. So I think it's a good move by the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yes, this is the kind of move that any contending team, I think, is wise to make, right? You grab a guy that's still clearly a productive pass rusher at an important position, and all it costs you is a sixth-round pick, all for it.
Let's touch on the Henry Ruggs news a little bit. Unfortunate news.
Yeah.
Henry Ruggs, convicted of drunk driving.
No, charged.
Charged with drunk driving, as of this morning, right? Charged. Yes. Driving 156 was the report, which is absurd.
Rear-ended a car, killed a woman and her dog.
Oh, God.
Car burst into flames. He was traveling with a passenger and a loaded gun and was apparently drunk.
Yeah.
This, so, by the way...
not bad. And then obviously, you're already thinking, okay, terrible, terrible incident. His career's obviously in jeopardy. And then the Raiders officially released him yesterday as well.
Yeah. I mean, the most obvious reaction to all this is, like, this is an incredibly sad thing to happen. And not because, like, Henry Ruggs, the 22-year-old, kind of flushed his life down the toilet, though that's obviously an unfortunate thing, but because, like, there's a woman and a dog that are dead now because this guy couldn't phone an Uber or use the NFL car service that exists in every major city in the country, or, you know, have a designated driver, just any of the many ways to avoid driving your ass hammered back from wherever the hell it is you've been at 156 miles an hour. Like, there was a generation, there was a time where drink driving wasn't seen as a particularly big deal and was just something people did. And, you know, you could kind of not excuse it, but it was a relatively accepted part of life. that time's a long time ago now. Like, even in this country, which I think has been slower to adopt those attitudes than other countries, yeah, where it's still, we are talking decades ago. You are a 22-year-old. You cannot have that attitude anymore. Like, it's just not life. It's so easy now to avoid drink driving. So easy. There's Uber, Lyft, the car service. You're rich. You could just pay somebody to drive you. There's two of you. One of you just doesn't drink. Like, it's so easy and so avoidable and so stupid for this to happen. And yet here we are. And Henry Ruggs, like, Raiders immediately cut him. And even though you're like, well, of course they did. The guy killed somebody late at night. Oh yeah, 3:30 a.m. was another aspect of this, right? Who had that line, like, nothing good happens after 2:30 in the morning or whatever?
Even after midnight.
Right. Probably perhaps. True.
Yeah.
So all of those things, yeah, Raiders, even after all that, you're still kind of vaguely surprised when the NFL just immediately cuts a guy that's like a key part of the team, but the Raiders immediately got rid of him. He's going to be charged with, or he has been charged with this. If he's convicted, it's a minimum 2 years in jail.
Yeah, they knew. I mean, I think a lot of it is they knew.
Sure.
He's getting charged, and it's not looking good. He's in his second year. He was the 12th overall pick in the draft. From a football standpoint, we had a lot of discussions about Ruggs and the merits of grabbing a guy that runs 4-2 versus more polished receivers, but all of that pretty much doesn't matter anymore because he's out of the NFL at the moment. And yeah, unfortunate incident, of course.
It's just so, like, it's so sad and so avoidable. Like, how hard is this? We know now that you don't drink and drive.
No,
there's so many ways to avoid doing it.
I agree with you. There are Uber, Lyft, or whoever else wants to sponsor the show. We'll mention everybody. There are easier ways to get lifts. I mean, to get cars, right? So that was, I don't like talking about this stuff.
No, it's not fun, but I think it is something that we should talk about and cover. Like, this is why, as much everybody loves freedom and personal freedom and your choice to do whatever the hell you want, but there are times in a society where your choices impact other people, and this is one of those times. You don't have the freedom to drink and drive. That is something you're not allowed to do because it isn't just your life you're putting at risk.
Yeah, nobody's fighting for that freedom, though. Nobody's saying, let me drink and drive. I think you're right, though. There was a time where people...
You head to the west of Ireland, the Healy Rays will pitch you on that one. Yeah.
It was like, people joked about it and stuff, right? I mean, it wasn't a big deal.
I remember
to a lot of people.
When I was a teenager, you know, there was some family, like, reunion party thing somewhere in Dublin, and like one of the old 80 plus year old grandparents, you know, got in the car at the end of this thing and like drove home pretty hammered. And it's like, you know, cars crawling along a few, however many blocks of the city it was at like, you know, 20 miles an hour. And you're like, oh, I hope they don't, you know, crash into something. But that's like 20, 30 years ago at this point. Like, we're old as hell. That's a long time ago.
Me.
I know, you know, that's a long time ago now, right? The current generation, 22-year-olds, shouldn't have experienced that. We've just developed so far beyond that.
DeSean Jackson has been released by the Los Angeles Rams. That was one of the guys that Ruggs always got compared to. DeSean Jackson, wide receiver 4 for the Rams, unhappy with his playing time. I think they tried to trade him, didn't find any willing partners. So DeSean Jackson's out there, potential speed receiver out there, and even at his old age, came into the league in 2008, still has the ability to get behind defenses. So not sure if somebody's going to look to pick him up. Any thoughts on DeSean being out there with the Rams?
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy. He's the mercenary for hire, right? Deep target available. Like, will travel, will, you know, like, he's the guy. And he's now available for anybody. It was working on the field. It was working for the Rams, right? They were getting a lot of success out of him. Now, obviously, off the field, it wasn't going as well, or schematically, or whatever it is. He wasn't in love with the opportunities he was getting. They may not have been in love with what he was giving them in total. So they mutually decided to, you know, bail on the experiment. But the threat he brings,
he's not going to have that many opportunities, even if he goes to any team.
But the threat he brings is evident. And like, I don't know if you can like just keep him happy for long enough, but like right now, you only need to keep him happy for half a season in the playoffs. You know, if you're one of those teams, Green Bay, I mean, it's got to be tempting.
I'm the person who would always sign a DeSean Jackson,
right?
Always sign a John Ross, who is, you know, the top receiver the other night for the Giants. I always want that guy. I also want him as my third or fourth option, which, you know, maybe he wasn't happy about. But if he did go to the Packers and it's like, you know, what Marquez Valdes-Scantling usually brings to that offense, but he's been hurt this year. Get behind the defense once or twice a game. You give me an opportunity for a 50-yard touchdown, a free 50-yard touchdown. So the Packers, the Chiefs, after all this, you know, that we've talked about, can you get him and Tyreek on the field at the same time? The Titans, do the Titans without Derrick Henry need to pivot to, you know, trying to win through the pass through the pass game a little bit more with Julio and AJ Brown and then a DeSean Jackson type? I'm just looking at like the best teams in the league. They could all use this type of player.
He should be a coveted commodity. I want to read you a couple of emails. The first one I want to read you just because I want to get your take on a phrase that was used. I'm only reading this email because of one.
Did I get the email?
One four-word phrase that made me laugh.
Do I have to pronounce it or something?
No, I got it. Don't worry. Sit back and chill. This email is coming from Matthew C. It's a vaguely interesting story. It's not as good as the Kelsey story with the ice hockey, right?
Oh yeah.
But it is an interesting story that I'm going to read just because it's got a funny phrase in it. This guy apparently played against Chase Claypool in high school over in Canada. Claypool went 0-for-3 with two pass breakups when targeted into this guy's coverage. He says that means he should be a corner in the NFL, right?
That's how it works, yeah.
But he also says, here's the phrase. In the same game, Claypool was flipped ass over tea kettle by a 130-pound punter who was primarily a rugby player. He ended up kicking his own teammate in the face on the play. And yes, he was still a 200-pound-plus guy in high school. Is ass over tea kettle a term?
Oh, yeah.
From where?
I don't know, but I mean, it's pretty...
Really?
I knew he fell over his face.
Yeah. I've heard ass over face. I've never heard ass over
tea kettle. Oh, this feels like something that would have started across the pond and then made its way here.
It does, right? But like, I've never heard that before.
You guys have way more tea kettles over there than we do.
Sure.
In general.
I mean, it's more, teapot rather than a tea kettle.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Maybe that's where we diverge.
It's like the pot calling the kettle black, Sam.
I don't think it is, but sure. I've just never heard the term ass over tea kettle before. I like it. I'm going to use it more in conversation.
Great. I can't wait to hear more of that on the podcast.
Next email. This one is from Daniel O'Keefe. And this guy just wants to add his voice to the absolute chorus of people in favor of random rugby jerseys for every pod.
That's so what you're reading here?
On Monday, there was just one person that gave me the green light. Since then, I mean, look, we're up to at least 5, maybe 6. It's been a landslide, Steve. As a Leinster season ticket holder, he's biased, but he was stoked when he saw the classic away jersey feature on the first YouTube video he watched. Next up, so he wants me to then explain to you the tomato is a fruit speech that Brian O'Driscoll gave once. It is a pretty funny story. Basically, Brian O'Driscoll was dared by his teammate to shoehorn the term knowledge is knowing a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad. So he was dared to get that into a press conference. He was like, just figure out a way of doing it. So O'Driscoll basically, he was like, it didn't even matter what the question was. Like, that was going to be my answer. Like, whatever they were asking, that's what
that's
I was firing out there.
It in. You just
absolutely.
It.
You just fire it out there. It doesn't matter. What are they going to do? Call you on it? He put that in. And it turns out that the bet was that if he won, the other guy or whoever lost the bet had to essentially get a back sack and crack wax. So he didn't want that. Made the other guy get it.
That's the story?
That's the story.
So the other guy got the wax.
I haven't seen evidence of that, but that was the ultimate conclusion of where that was going to go. He shoehorned it in. It became like this viral moment of what the fuck is Brian O'Driscoll talking about?
Sounds like a stupid bet.
And then the other guy, Gordon Darcy, must have had to get the waxing.
Can we stick with our lunch bets, please?
Sure.
Which, by the way,
I don't want to get... Yeah, I'm not...
Looking bad for you.
I'm not betting that. I mean...
No.
At no point will I be risking that as a consequence to anything we're doing.
Some of that you don't need because, you know, thanks to Manscaped.
That's true, yeah.
Good.
You got a Manscaped read there or is...
No.
We're still off of the week?
Nope. Manscaped is not a part of the shows
this
week.
That would have been a great transition.
But they'll be... It would. We got to time this
Wasted
up a little bit better.
Wasted it.
Time up the emails a little bit better. So.
All right. Now we got to talk about the Rams' approach to the draft.
One other thing. While we're talking about receivers not playing football, Michael Thomas and OBJ. Touch on them quickly.
Did Thomas...
He announced he's out for the season.
Did he Scottie Pippen this thing? I got injured on company time. I'm only rehabbing on company time. Like, is that
the way he was wording it?
No, obviously that's not how he worded it. But like, is that what he's doing here? Because people were complaining about the timing because he had the second surgery right in the dawn of the eve of the season.
I don't.
And everyone's like, why didn't you get that in March?
He just had setbacks at bad times.
I think there was a reasonable. Like, there was talk that Sean Payton and the Saints were frustrated at the timing of the last time he got the surgery.
Interesting.
And now he's shutting it down for the season right after Jameis Winston disappears.
I mean, that's not a good decision for anybody, though.
I mean, it works out pretty well for Michael Thomas.
Does it?
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting paid in the whole thing, but like, you still want to be on the field producing to get paid more.
Well, he's getting paid, and his capacity to have good numbers may have just disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I mean, if I was Michael Thomas and I was like working my way back from a lengthy and serious ankle injury...
You just want to play with Drew Brees?
Well, with Drew Brees, or, you know, if Jameis Winston is your quarterback, you can see a world where you have some significant production. All of a sudden, your options become Taysom Hill and Trevor Siemian. I might consider how much I really need to push back from this ankle injury. That's all I'm saying.
So Michael Thomas announces he's out for the season. So the Saints are not getting reinforcements to the receiving core. That is not great. And probably needs a little bit more help. Taysom Hill, the starter now Drew Brees is gone, but Jameis Winston out for the season. So Michael Thomas announces that he's gone. And then Kevin Stefanski announces to the Cleveland Browns that OBJ is essentially gone. So we did break down OBJ on the daily. Was it today? Losing track here. So we broke down a little bit of that news on the PFF NFL Daily today, which, by the way, speaking of emails, continue to email those screenshots that you're subscribed to both the Daily and the PFF NFL Podcast. And I will give away not just 25% off with the promo code NFLPOD, a full Edge subscription to somebody that sends that screenshot. So we broke it down a little bit on the Daily. But now, since that point, we've got Stefanski saying, hey, he's just not a part of the football team here. So he's out. They don't want a part of OBJ. They're negotiating with Andrew Berry, GM at the top, whatever that means, that it just seems like OBJ and the Browns, they're done being, on the same team here.
Yeah. Turns out once OBJ's dad fires out the Instagram post, it's curtains.
Yeah.
The problem is...
And they couldn't trade. It is interesting that teams don't always call the bluff, so to speak, right? Like, hey, we're not going to trade for DeSean Jackson. He's going to be out there. We're not going to trade for OBJ. He's going to be out there. Or they just don't. The demand isn't there either. But these guys are going to pretty much be on the street, I think, potentially for hire. I know DeSean is, but right. OBJ could be as well.
I mean, it's certainly possible. There's reports that they're like discussing next steps. You know, GM Andrew Berry and Odell Beckham's agent. I don't know what that can be. I mean, I guess there aren't that many pathways out of this except to just cut them and move on completely, which is a tough look for everybody. I don't know. I don't got nothing.
That's how we concluded the daily.
Yeah, I still don't know.
At the end, it was like, I can't figure out why this didn't work.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I'm more to the point, have no obvious solution for like a pathway forward.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
No, I mean, I think from a Brown standpoint, maybe just they don't have to think about this anymore. Like, why can't we get OBJ to be a part of the offense? Why is it not working? Why can't Baker Mayfield and him get on the same page or just, you know, play football well together? We can at least push that aside. And I also don't know why, as I mentioned on the daily, I think from a process standpoint, the move is right. They traded an aging guard and gave up draft capital for an alpha number one receiver, which is historically a force multiplier for offenses. And we see it across the league right now. The impact of Amari Cooper or CD Lamb on the Cowboys offense, the impact of DeAndre Hopkins on the Arizona offense, the impact of Antonio Brown leaving Pittsburgh, the impact of Julio Jones leaving Atlanta or being hurt or just not being there. OBJ was at that level. The process was right and sound by the Browns. It just did not work at all. And it probably is best to move on at this point.
We talked about on the daily there being a line where somewhere, even if it's not working, at some point OBJ becomes a headache and a problem within the locker room and something that is having a negative effect to the overall team beyond simply not maximizing the positive influence that he can have on the field. And I had no earthly idea where they were in relation to that line based off the information we had. It does sound like they've crossed that line now. Like at the point where he's been told to stay away from the team, they're meeting the GM to work out next steps. Like that sounds like the team at least is determined that
they're done.
You have become a bigger problem than you're worth at this point, and we just need to figure out what the exit strategy is for everybody.
My computer wants me to upgrade to Windows 11. Should I do it? Anybody?
No, I wouldn't.
Really? Is it risky?
I mean, I certainly wouldn't do it live on the podcast.
Not at the moment. I'm just saying, you know, when the podcast is over, what am I getting from Windows 11? Somebody give me some info here.
I couldn't care less.
All right, you want to talk Rams draft strategy?
Yeah.
All right, let's recap what's happened here. We discussed Von Miller. We did an emergency PFF NFL Daily, which, again, you can find on YouTube here as well. Emergency Daily, breaking down the Von Miller trade. Gets traded for next year's second and third round pick. The Rams are left with, what, a third, fifth, sixth, three, five, six, seven? Is that what they have left? We talked. They have an extra third.
Yeah, three, five, six, and two sevens, I think, is what they have left now.
So the Rams, you know, as the meme goes, you know, who needs draft picks, the whole thing. Trade in their first, trade in all their picks for stars. They've traded for Jalen Ramsey. They've traded for Matthew Stafford. They've now traded for Von Miller. Clearly, they are saying we want established NFL players in exchange for the unknown of these high-end draft picks.
Yeah.
And it is a fascinating strategy.
They're being mocked for the idea that they don't treat the draft seriously. Like, they don't want draft picks. They're trading them all away. They're getting rid of everything. And all they're doing is focusing on these superstars. And most people are joking that this is a bad way of doing business. It's unsustainable. It's silly. It's a, you know, foolish approach to the draft and everything we know that you build teams through the draft. I think people are completely either misreading or misrepresenting what the Rams are doing with their draft picks. One, they don't trade them all away. The Rams over the last 5 years have picked an average of more than nine times per draft, right? You only get given like seven draft picks to start with. They are picking an average of nine plus times each one of these drafts. Even now, with all the picks they've traded away, they still have what we just said. What was it? What did I say? 3577? 3677? Whatever it is. They got four picks right now.
I'll go to our mock draft tool here.
Les Snead was saying they anticipate getting another five from the compensatory pick system, right? Which is, I think you max out at four for a player plus the one they're getting for Holmes being now the Lions GM getting signed. So they're adding five. They're going to pick nine times again. Like, this is a team that does maintain a lot of draft picks. Now, okay, they're not first rounders. And this is the key. They have determined that we are better off taking our highest value draft picks and flipping them for sure NFL commodities. Jalen Ramsey, Matthew Stafford. By the way, both those players have been like utterly transformative for their respective units. And that way we don't have to risk missing on a draft pick. Because the last time we spent a first round draft pick on a player, it was Jared Goff and we got it wrong. So they've determined that we are better off using the highest value picks to get pure or surefire NFL players, even if it means we're overpaying, or not overpaying, but paying more in terms of salary. But they maintain a ton of draft picks. They are still picking a lot. And their draft picks represent a really big part of their roster. They are somewhere between fourth and seventh in the NFL, depending on the measure you use, of like homegrown talent making up their roster composition. So players they've drafted. Like, they value the draft. They just value it differently to everybody else. So if you're like out there joking that the Rams have like their team building strategy is just to decide we don't even bother with the draft, just trade away all the draft picks. That's not what they're doing.
I am very interested in it. They officially have a three, five, and two sevens.
Okay.
Is what they have. The three, as you mentioned, came as a compensatory pick from losing Brad Holmes. So they've got four picks left. So I think what's happening here is they are drafting a lot. So it's what we always talk about is draft and volume. And there is like a drop off in effectiveness of draft picks. First off, even a first rounder it's not a coin flip exactly, but it's always risky, right? If you went back in every draft in 3-4 years after the fact, you went and said, who are the best 32 players in this draft? And you put those guys up against what the first round actually was. Maybe half of them are first round picks or whatever that number is. But you'd always you'd have like a random sixth rounder. You'd have a random fourth rounder, bunch of second rounders or whatever it might be. It would be the worst mock draft ever. It would literally be the worst mock ever. If you put that mock draft out there, you would be fired from your job as a football analyst. But you'd be right because you got the top 32 players as far as value goes. They're taking that to the extreme and saying, is the hit rate better in the first round? Yes. Better in the second round? Yes. But it slowly starts to get smaller and smaller. And there is a big drop-off as far as hit rate when you get rounds 4 through 7. But you also have, when you do draft in volume 8-9 times a year, the goal is to just get 2 or 3 contributors per year, right? And if you continue to do that, that's what most teams are getting out of the draft. And they're just saying, I'll take the sure thing with the first rounder.
Yep.
And you have to pay the guy. Most of the time you have to pay him.
Right.
And then I'll take more shots later on. And I always say it puts a lot of pressure, I think, on the scouting department. You do have to hit on some of those third rounders, the Cooper Cups of the world. But they've made it work.
I think they've essentially determined that the difference between a fifth, sixth, and seventh rounder and a third rounder is negligible. And if we just get nine picks, if we just get nine selections, we are confident in our ability to get the same volume of players, even if those picks were third rounders or seventh rounders or sixth rounders or whatever. And that's a really low number, right? It's not like they've determined that it's a sure thing, but they've decided that these players are just guys that need to contribute on the roster and be passable, just be better than a replacement level player a couple of times, and we're good. And we'll take the highest value draft capital we have, and we'll acquire a Matthew Stafford, who single-handedly completely changes the offense, and we'll acquire a Jalen Ramsey, who single-handedly completely changes the defense. And I don't think that this is unsustainable. Like, this is something you can keep doing.
The problem with comparing these two, and the reason why I have more hesitancy on the Von Miller one, is because you know you've got Stafford for multiple seasons. You traded for Ramsey, and it wasn't the smartest move in the world to trade for him without having a contract in place. So they probably did have to pay him more than they would have if they had a contract in place at the time of the Jaguars trade. They got criticized for that, and rightfully so, I think. But now you have Ramsey long-term, and you've got Stafford for a few years. You really only have Von Miller for nine games. You have him for nine games plus the playoffs.
But you're basically not paying him. Like Denver are paying nine of $9.7 million salary.
I know, but the benefit of Von Miller ends as soon as the season ends this year. As soon as the season ends, you get into the offseason.
Not entirely. Like they will
entirely.
Still, no. They'll get a comp pick for him when he walks.
And that could no better than a five.
Correct.
Because he's 10-year vested. So,
but it's not nothing. Like again,
it's not nothing.
And again, if you essentially take the approach of, you know what, 3 to 7, the picks are the same. Now they're not, right? There is a difference. But if you've determined that the difference between a third rounder and a fourth and fifth, sixth, seventh is essentially not enough to care about, if you're looking at this,
then you're just like, giving up a second.
If you're like, we get Von Miller for the second half of a Super Bowl push, it doesn't cost us anything effectively in terms of salary, and we are netting back one pick. Like we're essentially trading away a second for $9 million of cap flexibility and half a season of a dude who is a potential game changer for a Super Bowl. It's definitely the shortest term move they've made in this sequence of roster building, but I don't hate it. Like there are people out there that are like, this is just dumb. Like this is the inexcusable move. We can't, there's no defending this. I mean, it kind of is. Like it's not, there are worse moves out there.
The takes are all over the place, Sam. The takes are all over the place. The Atlanta Braves just won the World Series as a team that really didn't have a chance right around the trade deadline and then made some moves at the trade deadline that led to a championship. I mean, football is different. You don't play baseball. There's like at the trade deadline, there's like teams will make three or four huge moves. You don't get that in the NFL because you also don't get the impact from one player as much as you do in, say, a baseball or basketball or whatever it is. But I don't think there's any harm in going for it if you have a plan. The reason why people are tied to this idea that going for it is bad, because teams did it poorly.
Yeah, it's usually all or nothing.
Right.
Like if you miss, you're screwed.
Teams used to go, it was like the Washington early Dan Snyder years, right? It's like, give me Albert Haynesworth. Give me every big name player
in free agency. The Eagles here, when they won free agency.
Eagles,
the dream team.
So we grew up in this football world, the salary cap football world, with this axiom that you can't go all in to win a championship. It just doesn't work in football the way it might in other sports. And for the most part, that's been true because teams didn't fix it on the backside, which I think you're describing. They do have a ton of draft picks historically. Now, because they only have four next year, and so maybe they get a comp pick for Von Miller, they get up to five draft picks. There's still some wheeling and dealing that needs to be done there. Right, or they're going to get a couple more comp picks from, if they get more comp picks from John Johnson leaving, Troy Hill.
So that's what they're
leaving,
they are expecting.
They're going to get up to that seven
this year. They are expecting to get, I think five was the number that Les Snead put on it, which is four that you the maximum you can get for players is four, and then one for Holmes, the GM. So if they get five comp picks plus the three or four that they're already left, I can't remember if that counts the Holmes one, the four that we currently have.
Holmes is counting as one.
Okay, so that then they've got three plus the five. They'll have eight picks before they even start drafting. Typically, the Rams trade down more than any other team. They will pick more than nine times again. Like, again, this idea that they've traded away all the draft picks. They've got nothing left. They don't. They're going to have 8-9 picks left, and they'll trade down and get more. This is a team that values the draft. They just value it differently to everybody else.
And they're also, right now, their last two second-round picks, Cam Akers and Tutu Atwell, getting nothing from either guy.
And then the last first-round pick was Jared Goff. Like, you can right. You can definitely construct an argument that, like, we don't want any part of those first two rounds.
All I will say, though, it's not without risk. I do think it is more difficult to find players, because when you do hit on a first- or second-round player, that's the best value in the NFL, right? When you hit on a first- or second-round player and you have a first contract that you're paying them and you're getting on-field production out of them, that is the best value in the NFL.
But it's the risk analysis of, oh, great. If you could tell us we could get the rookie quarterback on the great, like, cheap deal, absolutely, awesome. But how many picks do we need to torch before that happens? Versus just flipping it for Matthew Stafford. Like, they have essentially made that determination that, yeah, that's great. That's the dream. That's what everybody's chasing for. But we think we've actually got a better shot of doing it this way and overpaying for the guy that we know is good.
All I'm saying is, all I'm saying is, here's where I think you incur the risk, right? If you're losing the ability to hit on first and second rounders that are going to be cheap, you're losing that ability. You're putting stock in needing to hit on rounds 3 through 7 somewhere. Somewhere you have to hit on some of those picks, the Cooper Cups of the world. That is very much the strategy that made the Seattle Seahawks, and it's also the strategy that dropped the Seattle Seahawks from elite to just another roster, right? They went from, can you sustain hitting on those picks? I've brought that up a bunch, right? Seattle became the best defense in the league, or the best team in the league, in 2013 and very close in 2014 by having Russell Wilson in the third round and Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and all those guys in the middle rounds. But, and that luck ran out at some point.
But the difference is Seattle weren't doing anything else in addition to that. Like, the difference between the two is, even if the Rams stop hitting on draft picks completely, they have still taken all of their most valuable assets and gotten the most valuable positions in the NFL covered by them, right?
True.
So if you're Seattle and the entire thing was built off, like, nailing drafts, we had, you know, Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, we had all these guys we got in the draft, and then suddenly you stop hitting on the draft. Well, now, okay, but what? So where's the team getting better? If you're the Rams and you stop hitting on draft picks, you can still say, all right, we haven't added anything to the draft, but on the other hand, we still are bringing in these elite players by flipping the most valuable draft assets we have. Like, that, I think, is a real difference. And again, what they've determined is a better way of doing it, because it isn't actually relying as much.
We have a question, why, you know, from somebody in the chat. Why isn't hitting on a third to seventh rounder more of a value than hitting on a first or second? Of course it is. But the percentages do drop, right?
And significantly.
Is it Jordan Rodrigue, who covers the Rams for The Athletic? She does a lot of great work as far as, like, she's plugged into the organization and does a lot of, like, deep dive type of stuff, process-oriented stuff. And she used the phrase, like, they put this into their team-building model, right? So Sarah Bailey heads up their analytics department over there. I know she's done great work through the years. I know a few people in the front office there. I know that they put a lot of thought into this. They've studied this. They do specifically devalue the linebacker position. And you can see that, right? When we rank their linebackers every year, it's like 31st or 32nd.
Right.
But they realize, you know what? Aaron Donald's going to make up for that. Like, Aaron Donald's going to be more valuable than our entire linebacking core anyway. So they have answers for this stuff. All I'm saying is they have a formula, so to speak, or an algorithm. They have something that they're plugging this into.
Yes.
That is pointing to make this move rather than that. Make the Vaughn move. But every move is not 100%. It's like the go-for-it decision on fourth down. I'm trying to bring to light where the risk is. At some point, there is risk in this whole thing.
Right,
and giving up two picks for half a year of Von Miller is risky, especially if you don't – like, it is saying, like, if we win the Super Bowl, it's worth it. If they don't win the Super Bowl, was it worth it? Because it is going to hinder their team-building effort going forward, no matter what the formula says.
This is the most sort of short-sighted move that they have made. But, again, like, if – not every move is like this one, right? This is one. All of these team roster construction is always a spectrum of moves, right? It's a bunch of low round guys. It's a top round guy. It's the high price free agents. It's the low price free agents. It's a whole
diversify
mix.
Your funds, man.
Right. So this is the least defensible move that they have made in terms of a long term sustainable model of doing things. On the other hand, if it's the only one you do, okay. It's a risk. It's worth taking a shot, isn't it? Right? This is a team that right now is arguably the best in the NFL. And remember, narrowly missed out on the first Super Bowl chance they had, right? This is not a team that already has one in the bank, you know, who can kind of...
Right. They were close.
They almost got there and didn't. Now they desperately want to get back to that Super Bowl and win it this time. So if this is your one sort of over the line, you know, a little bit too far, immediate short-term move, it's not great, but I don't hate taking a shot, like rolling the dice and seeing if you can hit the six because of it.
I think the other...
But the point is, everybody's treating it like this is the only thing they do. They just take all their draft picks, they right. flip them for players, and they don't even draft. They don't even care about the draft. If you just look at their roster composition, look at the number of times they're drafting, that is not how the Rams are going about things. This is not this like psychotic, reckless approach to the draft. This is just treating the value in draft picks that everybody agrees, it's treating the value different. And instead of like using the value as a sort of change in the odds for drafting, they use the value and flip it for something tangible.
Yeah, and just for perspective too, 2019 draft, Taylor Rapp's a starter right now, their second rounder. You have third round running back Darrell Henderson contributing. You have third round cornerback David Long, who replaced Troy Hill, who leaves, right? I mean, they have done a good job of having the replacements ready. Fifth round guard David Edwards play. I mean, they're getting a lot of value out of those guys. Van Jefferson was a second rounder at receiver. He was the other second rounder with Cam Akers in 2020. Terrell Burgess, I still believe, is a good player. Jordan Fuller is a sixth rounder who's starting at safety. So they are finding starting caliber players. In 2018, Brian Allen, starter. Obo Okoronkwo hasn't played a ton, but has been a contributor, right? So they're getting players in those other rounds. We mentioned Cup many times as a third rounder. They got John Johnson in the third round. So the other part of it is, are they that good at evaluating rounds 3 through 7? Do they trust that ability so much, despite what the data says, that maybe that isn't sustainable? We're at a run of, I don't know, since 2016, you know, because they had Tyler Higbee in the fourth round. He was more of a second rounder who fell because of off field. But since 2017, they've done a pretty good job of finding value on days 2 and 3. And they're banking on that going forward in exchange for having Stafford and Ramsey and all these other good players. I said something else I wanted to add to it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Here's the one other point, right? They're not just going all in for this year. The Von Miller move is just for this year.
Yeah.
But I do think the Rams are thinking in windows of time here. And I don't know if like from a team building strategy, if that's not the worst. Like, here's this 3-year window where we're going to try to win. We don't want to sacrifice the 3 years, right? But it's a 3-year window. We might sacrifice year 4. It's kind of like what New England was in last year, right? They tried to win in a late career Tom Brady window. Last year was a big sacrifice year for them. Bad cap situation. They hadn't drafted well in a couple years, so they had to restock the roster this year. So you lose a year. And I think the Rams, when and if it comes back to bite the Rams, it's like, okay, in 2023, we got to bite the bullet, and or 24, whatever it is, we might have a bad year, but we had this window of time where we were a Super Bowl contender.
I don't even know if that's the case.
It also might not. I don't
right. Like the problem with this is a unique approach to team building in the NFL. Nobody else is doing it like this. The problem with that is we haven't got enough evidence yet. We're not far along enough in the project to determine if there's another shoe to drop. So it's like, you know, every year people mock the Saints for the way they deal with their salary cap, right? And it's like, cap hell is just around the corner. Cap hell's been around the corner for like a decade. It's not coming, right? Yeah. They treat the cap in a different way to everybody else. They don't treat it like they're idiots. Like, they understand how it works. They're not like, this isn't some reckless, idiotic way of dealing with it. The reckoning that you keep thinking is coming doesn't come. And the reason it doesn't come is because they've planned this out. Now, we're just not far enough along in this process to understand if they've got it planned out the way the Saints do, and they can keep going like this for like a decade, or if they are one of those teams like the Eagles or like the Patriots or the teams that did kind of go harder at a specific window of time, knowing that somewhere along the line there would be consequences.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be fun to watch. I'm intrigued by it. The Rams, look, they're one of the best teams in the NFL. You could see down the road where they're going to have, you know, like an Andrew Whitworth to replace, and we'll see what happens. But power move by the Rams going after Von Miller. So, as always, I'm strictly on the fence with it. I think there's risk because it's a 1 year, but I think it fits into their overall strategy, and they've found ways to mitigate it. Do we even have time to do Thursday Night Football? Should we push that to tomorrow?
Yeah.
Colts Jets.
Okay.
We're over an hour here.
Also, it's the Colts Jets.
It's also the Colts Jets. We'll probably touch on it quickly. Season. There's a lot to talk about. Is there anything else we missed around the NFL this week? Appreciate everybody being on YouTube. Don't forget to hit that thumbs up while you're in here. I think that's it. Sounds like a great show. It's in my notes. It's going to be a great show.
Okay.
That was an awesome show. We talked about a lot. Anything else you want to cover on the way out here?
No.
Okay, great.
Don't drink and drive.
Do not drink and drive. Do not.
I'll do it.
I agree. All right, guys. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Again, hit that thumbs up. Use the promo code NFLPOD, NFLPOD, 25% off any PFF subscription. A bunch of you have already done that. We appreciate it. We're here to help you. We'll be back here tomorrow previewing all of the, was it week 9?
Yeah.
All the week 9 action. See you tomorrow.